All right, we'll get started. So just attendance. Franny is not here. I know Julia's not here. Marianne is here for Rob. Mike is here. Emily's cord is here. Sam Miller, I don't see Sam. Who's that? Oh, he's in Europe. Oh, okay. Well, of course he's not here. Greg Evans. Jerry Gatos is here. Greg is out. Lindsay is not here. Leah is here. Joe is out. Carl is here. Sherry is out. And Nat.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm here on behalf of Lindsay.
Oh, right. Okay. Great. Thank you. Forgot about that.
Really good. Yeah, she just gave birth 2 days ago.
Wow. Great.
Tell her congratulations on her.
Yeah.
Can you tell the gender? It's a boy, 7 pounds, 13 pounds. His name's August.
Oh.
Oh,
this was born in August?
The due date was in August. In the family. Gabriel's birthday.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Okay, preliminary remarks, announcements. I don't have any preliminary remarks. I would like to add a quick update after audience participation on the recommendation that we developed for the board at the last committee meeting and the board's decision related to that. Are there any other items, topics? Nope, okay. Do we have any audience participation? No? Okay.
Yeah, if I could remind everyone really quickly to please turn your mic on when you speak so that the recording can hear your voice. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Camille. Okay. Oh, and I also, I do have an announcement. I do want to, I didn't get to really thank staff. Our last meeting, I know they put in a lot of hard work and time and effort into kind of facilitating a really interactive conversation, which was amazing. So, thank you to Jennifer, Andrew, Tom, Camille, AJ. Who else was at the
Hart?
Hart, yeah.
Oh, Jeremy.
And Jeremy. Thank you so much. It was really great. We appreciate it. Okay. So first item is minutes, approval of the minutes. Anyone like to?
I just had a quick correction. Changes? I noticed in the minutes that it indicated I left the meeting at 6:10. I actually think I arrived approximately at 6:10 and did not leave. So just wanted to make that edit.
Okay.
So, easy mistake. So. But with that amendment, I move to approve the motions. Or I approve to approve the minutes.
Okay.
Second.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Minutes are approved. We do have a Do we have a quorum, actually? We do. Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
So Mike leads. Eventually.
All right. Great. Okay. So at our last committee meeting, Jennifer did help us summarize kind of the recommendation, and I'm going to read that really quickly. So on August 6th, our committee was given a presentation of the proposed network and projects findings to date from the JWA analysis. The committee then participated in small group discussions about the benefits of and concerns about the proposed network and outcomes, as well as topics of focus for the implementation process. The small group exercises were then followed by deliberation, concluding with the development of their recommendation to the board. SBC members expressed support for the proposed network overall and recommended that implementation include a thoughtful process and communication strategy that promotes the positive aspects of the proposed changes. SPC members discussed the merits of rolling out the network changes all at once as compared to a phased approach over 2 years with primary changes occurring in the first year. While both approaches were acceptable to SPC members, most advocated for the changes to be implemented as quickly as could be reasonably achieved with the guidance that the changes of and timing of changes be clearly articulated to stakeholders. So Carl, Emily, would one of you like to kind of talk about the boards, what happened at the board meeting related to this?
And so what you just read was basically given to the board. And this is a great example of how helpful that was to have that kind of statement coming from a group like SBC with our diverse membership and our thoughtful thought process around that. The other thing I wanted to mention was that in addition to those things, we're kind of in the middle of this at this point, so there's still an opportunity for a lot of public feedback. So I didn't want anyone to think, and it's important that we not only we as SBC, but also when we're talking about this with others in the community, that there, no final implementation strategy has been made at this point. But anything they have to say is very, very valuable, because we know this has the potential to affect people in a very positive way, but also affect some people in not necessarily disastrous ways, but just in ways that they're going to have to make some adaptations to this new plan or possible new plan. So. That's what I want to say about it. But Emily, did you want to tack on to that?
Sure. I think the summary that you just read was really pretty comparable to what the board arrived at, in part thanks to the SBC recommendation. So there was a little bit of discussion around the timing of how the rollout might look. But there was, I think, resounding agreement that the communication and being well articulated to the community and the stakeholders was really key. Is that fair, Carl?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we should be very proud of the work that we did here, you did, and that, it was very effective.
Committee members, anybody have questions related to that update? Okay. All right, if you think of anything, we can come back to it. The next item that we have is a presentation from Kelly. Is that right? Okay, Kelly. Greenhouse gas inventory results.
All right. Everybody's on this side of the room, so I'm going to kind of reach around so that I can see everyone. Thank you all so much for having me today. My name is Kelly Hale, and I am LTD's Sustainability Program Manager. I am thrilled to be here today to share the results with the Strategic Planning Committee on LTD's very first greenhouse gas inventory that will help us on a number of fronts. And so I'm going to dive right in, and please feel free to think about all your questions, and we'll have a discussion at the end. So I wanted to be here today. The overview of my presentation is that I'm going to start off by talking about the purpose of the study and a little bit of the historical context to put this into perspective. I'm going to share two sets of results with you today. The first set of results are the GHG impacts from transit's operations, including all mission critical activities. And the second is really exciting, and that is to put the GHG emissions in context, showing the GHG benefits from transit at the community scale as a whole. And this is building on the presentation that I came to you with back in April, where we talked about how, transit is really part of the solution on a number of sustainability benefits, one of which is greenhouse gas emissions. And so we'll be able to see an estimated quantity of how much benefit we are really providing to the community from offering a public transit service in our community. I'm going to touch on next steps at the end, and then leave a few minutes for questions at the end. So the purpose for doing this analysis is really focused on these four items. There's other benefits of doing this as well, but the first is to really understand how LTD's emissions, both the emissions from transit and the benefits, fit into a variety of other goals that we are all living in relation to. So there are regional goals, there are state goals, and there are local goals. understanding where we fit into that broader picture is pretty important. It also provides us with some information to make operational decisions. And when we get to the next steps at the end, that's what I'll touch on, because this will lead into the long-term fleet plan that we are developing to figure out what kinds of buses LTD is going to be investing in over the long term, and what kinds of changes operationally we might be able to make in the very near term versus what kinds of technology and advancements do we want to invest in over time. So that's a big deal. The board has expressed some interest in thinking about doing an update to our sustainability policy that was passed back in 2007. And there's also been some discussion about the possibility of being able to set some GHG reduction goals. And so this information that I'm going to be sharing with you today will be helpful to help set the context for what that might look like, what might be the range of goals that we might be able to set based on our current performance. So that's the purpose. The historical context, this was in your packet, but back in 2007, this is just a few of the highlights. There's been a lot of activity on a number of these fronts over the time period here, but so back in 2007, that was when LTD's board of directors set their sustainability policy. It focused on four main areas. The first was to increase ridership. The second was to focus on emissions from, buying environmentally friendly vehicles. The third was related to our construction projects and figuring out how to reduce impacts from construction projects. And the fourth was to deal with our operations and look for ways to improve the sustainability of our operations. So that was the policy that was set back in 2007. At the same time in 2007, the state set some greenhouse gas reductions, reduction goals, and pretty it's a pretty standard goal in many states and many jurisdictions to look at mid-century, 2050, and trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by an order of about 80% over whatever baseline. You know, sometimes people use a 1990 baseline. Sometimes people don't have data going back that far. The state of Oregon, I believe, uses a 2010 baseline. So, but that's a typical greenhouse gas reduction that you'll see in lots of jurisdictions. In 2014, LTD voluntarily joined APTA, the American Public Transit Authority's sustainability commitment. And that was a voluntary process where we started measuring some of our progress, our resource consumption, our energy use, our water use, and set some sustainability goals. And we were actually awarded the silver level of that award for joining that commitment. In 2015, due to a number of state laws, the Central Lane, well, the LCOG conducted some scenario planning looking at what options were there for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, especially from transportation in our community. And so they did some scenario planning to figure out what options were available and then selected a preferred scenario. That included a number of, it looked at increasing transit, and transit was a big part of that preferred scenario. So that whole process went on in 2016, and then, in 2015, and then that related to the City of Eugene's Climate Recovery Ordinance. That's what CRO stands for. And that was a process. It was passed in 2014 and then updated significantly in 2016 with four very specific goals that were set. Two of the goals focus on the community as a whole, of which LTD obviously is an important key stakeholder. And so those two community goals were focused on reducing community fossil fuel consumption by 50% over 2010 levels by 2030, trying to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in accordance with what the science says it would result in about 2 degrees of warming. So trying to get back to that 350 parts per million of greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere by 2100. And what that ends up equating to is about a 7.6% greenhouse gas reduction each year for the community as a whole. So those are two very ambitious goals that were passed by the Eugene City Council in 2016. In 2018, LTD created my position. It's our first paid position focused on sustainability, the Sustainability Program Manager. And we actually also were given a grant through the MPO for looking at our long-range fleet plan and figuring out which alternative technologies might be an option for LTD to continue to look at, study, potentially invest in. So that's the analysis that I mentioned back in April that will be starting later this year. And then in 2019, we've spent some time continuing with our testing of electric buses. And as you guys know, we've started the two MOD pilots, one in Cottage Grove and the one that just launched last week in downtown Eugene. So we've been busy with those projects as well. So that's a little bit of historical context. So I'd like to just frame the results before we get into the drum roll of what our results look like. I'd like to just frame that, you know, transit is a unique type of entity in the fact that our basic core mission of providing public transit does have benefits for the community. So we do produce emissions, and then we also have these emissions benefits. And so that's what this graphic on the left is. You can see the greenhouse gas emissions going into the cloud here, that representing the atmosphere, and the red emissions are those produced from transit. So you can think about the fuel usage in our vehicles, electricity and natural gas used in our buildings, and refrigerants used in our vehicle air conditioning systems that occasionally leak out and actually can contribute to warming of the atmosphere, not through combustion, but just because of the type of gas that it is. On the green side over here, the benefits from transit really focus on two different types of benefits. The first is what they call a ridership benefit. And if you think about that, it's if you made a choice to take a trip on transit instead of getting into a personal vehicle, you would save the vehicle miles traveled from both the personal vehicle running as well as the bus running. So the ridership benefit is really looking at the reduction in vehicle miles traveled from reduced vehicle or passenger vehicles on the road. Broader than that, though, there's a tool that was developed by the Transportation Cooperative Research Program, TCRP, that has looked at additional benefits from transit. And that's what this graphic on the far right, when you're looking at the screen, is really getting at. And so what that is trying to say is that at the top, you can't see my cursor there, but that investments in transit infrastructure have been documented to actually promote a compact community. So as development occurs, when there is a robust public transit system, development naturally happens around transit stations and routes. And so this tool is trying to quantify the benefits associated with that. And so the concept is that as a transit improvement or a transit system is put into a community, that that leads naturally to compact development. And the benefits of that compact development spread in a variety of ways, right? So even if you're still driving your personal automobile, if the destinations that you're traveling to are now closer together because of that compact development, then you save VMT, right? The vehicle miles traveled. It also makes biking and walking trips more attractive and more realistic if those destinations are closer together and now within the range that a bike could take you or that you could get to by walking. So it also increases the mode to non-transit modes, but also lower greenhouse gas emitting modes. And so that's the idea behind this land use benefit component of the benefit of transit. So I'll share some results from that in a little bit. But before we get there, there's one other piece that you need to know in order to understand how I'm gonna frame these results. And that gets a little technical, I apologize for that, but in GHG accounting land, there are differences between different types of activities that lead to emissions from an organization. So they differ, they call different emissions from different sources as scopes 1, 2, and 3. So you can see all the different types of greenhouse gas emissions that are up in the cloud. The big one obviously is carbon dioxide. The other ones that LTD has some responsibility for is a little bit of methane, the CH4, and a little bit of nitrous oxide, the NTO, N2O, from incomplete combustion of fossil fuels. And then we have some HFCs, hydrofluorocarbons, which are those refrigerants that I was mentioning that can leak out of air conditioning systems on our buses. So those are the types of gases that we're responsible for. And then There's really two types of emissions. Direct emissions is what they call scope one. And so if you think about the types of activities that an organization is engaged in where they both own the equipment that is causing the emissions to be reduced or to be emitted into the atmosphere and manage those resources, then those are the ones that we really have the most ownership over, right? And so those are the ones that most protocols ask you to report on at a minimum. Then there's these indirect emissions, which means that those emissions are shared between multiple entities. And there's two different types of indirect emissions. There's a special type of indirect emissions that's called that is basically electricity, right? And if you think about electricity, we demand the electricity by turning our switches and our equipment on and off, but we don't have control over what utility we select and what type of fuels that they use to generate the electricity. So we don't have the control of that, and that's where the emissions actually take place. So it is a shared emission source because we both have some responsibility, but we don't have full control over those emission reduction activities. We do have control over how much we consume. So then that scope three category is really another category of indirect emissions, shared emission sources, where we have some responsibility but not ultimate control. And so that's kind of everything else that you don't own directly. So we don't own the planes that our employees fly on for business travel. We don't own the landfills where our solid waste ends up. But we do have control over how much solid waste we're generating, how much business travel, how many seats we're demanding on those planes. And so looking at our scope three emissions, even though they're considered voluntary in most reporting protocols, can be really helpful in illuminating where we have some ability to influence emissions over time. And it really clarifies our broader picture of our carbon footprint, even if we don't have direct control over those emission sources. So I'll be reporting our emissions by those three scopes, just so that you know. The big one here on scope three, though, too, just to foreshadow, is this concept of production of purchased materials. So that is all the goods and services that we buy. And if you think about as those goods and services are being manufactured, there are greenhouse gas emissions that are caused through that manufacturing process. And again, this is a shared emission source. We don't have direct control over how the manufacturers are making goods and services, but we do have some influence over what we buy and how much we buy. So that's the idea there. So with no further ado, a little drum roll, please. And here's our first set of emissions. So analysis took a look at 7 years worth of data from fiscal year 2012 through 2018. To kind of get grounded in what our results look like, I wanted to show you just 1 year's worth of results here. This is from fiscal year 2018. And you can see that the results here are broken up by the three scopes. So scope one for us here at LTD is our fleet. Obviously, that's the big deal. It's the big blue bar in the room here. And then we have some natural gas that we use in our owned and operated facilities, and those refrigerants that leak out of our bus air conditioning systems over time. Scope 2 emission sources here, you can see our electricity consumption for all of our facilities. And then scope 3 includes our business travel, our solid waste that goes to Short Mountain Landfill. I'll skip over that upstream energy production. I'll come back to that in a second. The employee commute, that looks at how many employees we have and how they're getting to work. And again, that's not something that LTD has full control over or ownership over in any stretch, but it is a shared source. We're asking them to come to work, and we can still provide some incentives to encourage or influence behavior on what modes they're selecting to get there. And then the two big ones in scope three, again, are the supply chain. That's the goods and services that we're purchasing. And that was looking at the types of goods and services that were purchased in fiscal year 18 based on our budget. And then that light blue bar is just looking at not the tailpipe emissions associated with the fossil fuel used in our fleet, but all of the upstream emissions associated with producing and refining and mining the fossil fuels that we use in our fleet vehicles. So it is not our control again, but we are demanding the fuel consumption that runs all of our owned fleet vehicles, and then that upstream mining just from the fuel consumed in our fleet vehicles is that light blue bar. So when you look at how our emissions have changed over time, these are just the scope 1 and 2 emissions. So just this, the first four bars here, the fleet, natural gas, refrigerants, and electricity, so that you can see how those have changed over time. Some key lessons here is that, in general, our fleet emissions in aggregate have been fairly consistent over time. We have seen a little increase here in 2010, about a 10% increase. But that our fleet emissions are more than 94% of all of the emissions that LTD has direct control over from the scope 1 and 2. Now, the next question is, given that fleet is the big deal, what can we do about that? And that's going to be the focus of that next step that I was talking about in the analysis that we're going to be doing to look at what different fuels, what different technologies are available on the market, and what would they cost, and what kind of benefits would there be for LTD to invest in any of these. But this is kind of foreshadowing for that analysis to say there are lots of different opportunities for investing in different fuels or different technology, and they would have a dramatic impact on the fossil or the greenhouse gas emissions associated with our fleet. So if you look at the bottom axis here, you'll see that this is in metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions. That's the standard unit for this kind of analysis. And you can see that there's different types of fuels that are showing here to show what it would look like over 40,000 vehicle miles driven. And that's about what it would be per bus for a year. So this is looking at, okay, if the top bar, the diesel B5, is kind of what we have as a standard, that's our standard diesel bus, and then the top bar in the yellow section is the B5 diesel hybrid. So for our hybrid fleet, that's what that is. And what B5 means is that's the standard diesel that's sold everywhere in the state of Oregon. It means it's 5% biodiesel, 95% petroleum-based diesel, and there's a state mandate that all diesel sold in the state has to be at least B5. So that's why that's kind of the baseline for the 40% of our fleet vehicles that are straight diesel buses and the 60% of our fleet vehicles that are diesel hybrid buses. Now, currently on the market, there are a number of other fuels that we could be in purchasing, and we could, you know, it's a change that we could make anytime because it's on the market today. So we could invest in a biodiesel blend. That's what B20 is. That's the typical blend that most manufacturers allow with no additional accommodations. And then the R numbers there are for a different type of fuel called renewable diesel. And it is chemically identical to petroleum-based diesel. It just comes from renewable plant-based feedstocks. And there are different types of feedstocks that you can use, which is why on some of these bars, you may notice that there's an error bar on here. So depending on the feedstock that was used in producing the fuel, that could have higher greenhouse gas emissions or lower greenhouse gas emissions. So for a 99% renewable diesel, sorry, is my mic cutting in and out? You could show that it could be, you know, roughly a 60% reduction from the B5 all the way down to a, a 40% reduction here down to a 60 or greater percent reduction if you were down at this end of the error bar. So the key lesson here is just that there's lots of opportunity if we wanted to really take a focus on reducing our fleet emissions. And there are some things that we could do soon, because they're available on the market today. And then there's some things that might require more effort and energy because it would require investing in new technology that we don't have here at LTD's bus yard. So that would be, you know, continuing to invest in battery electric vehicles and charging infrastructure, or continuing to invest or choosing to invest in a compressed natural gas environment where you could either run a fossil-based compressed natural gas, which is what this bar looks at, or you could choose to run a renewable natural gas product that's down with this bar. And LTD is going to continue to look at these results through a next study that's coming up soon. So the last thing, about emissions is I wanted to just touch on that concept of supply chain emissions that I mentioned before. And so when we looked at the emissions just from 2018, We saw that the emissions from the goods and services that we're buying was significant. But the thing that is really interesting about supply chain emissions is that they're lumpy over time, depending on the level of investment that you have in a given year in big projects. And we know from looking at the budget that our budget has really gone up or down depending on grants that we've gotten, depending on investments in capital infrastructure like the West Eugene MX project, or in years that we have significant bus purchases. So this supply chain set of emissions really varies pretty dramatically depending on our level of expenditure. And there's two main types of purchases that really represent the bulk of those supply chain emissions. In years that we have significant expenditure towards vehicle purchases, the manufacturer of buses and vehicles and tires and parts, that's a significant portion of that in years where we have expenditure towards that. And then construction. Asphalt, concrete, and construction materials is a significant portion of that supply chain set of emissions over time. So I wanted to now give you the really good news. Now that you're depressed at how big of our footprint really is, now you get to see what the good news looks like. So back to those two benefits of ridership. The first one, I'm just going to look at our emissions from scopes 1 and 2, the ones from LTD's operations, in comparison with that first type of benefit, just the ridership benefit, the reduction of VMT associated with people choosing to ride the bus instead of getting in a personal automobile. And you can see that the ridership benefit for the Eugene Spring for LTD's service territory is dramatically larger than our entire footprint from our scope 1 and 2 emissions. So that's good news, right? And that the takeaway here is just that ridership benefits from transit are more than two times the emissions from transit operations. And so it's really important for folks in the community as well as our board to understand that no matter what kind of vehicles, even though fleet is our biggest source of emissions, no matter what type of vehicles we have on the road, transit is still part of the solution for climate change. And we are doing providing an important service for the community in terms of reducing emissions. And then the picture gets even more exciting when we look at that land use benefit. So remembering again that we're talking about estimating the impact associated with that compact development and how that continues to reduce VMT, vehicle miles traveled, for the entire community. We see that when we look at that blue bar, which is the greenhouse gas emissions for Eugene Springfield gasoline consumption for the entire Eugene Springfield community, right? This is the entire community. This is not just LTD operations. This is the entire Eugene Springfield community in the blue bar. And then when we add up both the ridership benefits that we saw on the previous slide, which is that light green sliver at the bottom of the green chart, along with the land use benefits that are estimated to come from compact land use in our community, without transit, we could see that Eugene Springfield greenhouse gas emissions from passenger vehicles could be 25% larger than they are today. So it's a pretty big impact. So with that, I just want to leave you with the fact that we are moving forward with a couple of next steps. We are moving forward with purchasing our next electric vehicles through the State of Washington contract that is currently being awarded. It should be awarded later, hopefully later this month, and then we should be able to evaluate the proposers that were selected on that and move forward with our own procurement. So that's exciting. And we are beginning the process for doing that more detailed analysis of all of those technologies and fuels that I mentioned on that bar chart with the error bars to show what would a triple bottom line analysis look like for LTD when we looked at what do we need for our specific location, our specific resources and infrastructure that we have here, what would be the costs, the environmental benefits, the social benefits of different investments. And we'll be bringing those results back to this group when that analysis is completed, probably later in 2020. So thank you so much for your time. And if there's any time for questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise.
Can you remind us of the number of electric buses on the street now, and then what, how many we're planning to purchase and when they're likely to hit the street?
Sure.
So we've been testing 5 buses. Of those, we've actually taken delivery of 4 of them, and we have 2 of them in active operation. And those buses have been in test mode, so we've never accepted these buses. So what the data that we learned from these buses, which Kelly has really been involved in our maintenance team and our ops team, we feel we can make a commitment to purchase 10 buses off the state contract. That contract will not be awarded. So at this point, the vehicles that we have not been accepted, and we want to use this information to inform the procurement of 10 electric buses.
So that would be 15 altogether?
No, these first 5 will remain in test mode only. We just kind of tested them and just determined that we weren't going to accept them at this point.
Oh, okay.
But we needed a lot of that information, and we've been working with a contractor to do that. So, we'll see what the next steps are. Is there a possibility to negotiate something with the existing one? But that's undetermined. But what we do know is that we have funding for 10 buses.
And what's really exciting about that is that through the last year of testing these buses, we've learned a lot. We know exactly how we're going to implement electric buses into our fleet. And we're really excited about it as a technology. Our testing program has been really successful in that we know that we can make use of electric buses in our fleet. And so we're really excited to move forward. And that'll end up being, with the funding we currently have, 10% of our fleet vehicles would be electric.
So just to make sure I understand, we have received 4. We're planning to get another one, but we're not planning to accept that batch of first 5.
We may not. We may not. We've gathered information. So at this point, like Kelly said, we're waiting on the Washington contract and see if there's possibilities in that. So once we have that information, we can bring a formal recommendation to our board. And that was expected to close at the end of August, but they've extended it through September. So that's what's delaying our decision.
So the Washington contract is for 10 buses different from the 5 buses?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So I assume that those 10 buses would incorporate lessons learned that caused us to not want to accept the 5
buses. Yes,
absolutely. Buses.
That's correct. Okay. You surmised correctly.
Thanks.
Oh, so Kelly, I was wondering if someone were trying to develop a strategy for sustainability, I was hoping that I could say something and have your opinion also to have you add to the strategy conversation, which is that since most of our gas emissions come from our fleet, that a strategy could be every opportunity there would be to purchase a new bus, it should be one that like an electric bus or something that doesn't use that emits fewer greenhouse gases.
So what the our overwhelming majority of the fleet or the emissions that we have the most control over come from our fleet. So we need to look at that. That's where the biggest opportunity exists.
Okay.
What we need to do next, though, instead of just saying, okay, we're going to just out of the air pick which technology we want to move towards, right, we want to say, well, what kind of ongoing strategy. What could we do immediately? What could we do over the next 5 years? What could we do over 10 years? And then what could we do over 20 years? And what would those differences be in terms of cost, in terms of greenhouse gas reduction, in terms of other social benefits that may come from the community as a whole? What partnerships could we be exploring right now? One of the options that has come up is that there's a source of locally produced renewable natural gas from our wastewater treatment plant. There are a number of factors that we need to be doing additional research on and understanding what the implications would be for LTD. Through our electric bus testing, we know that electric buses can fit into our fleet, but it's a very different model, right? It's not, you can't store electricity the same way you can liquid fuels. So You know, through this analysis, we'll be able to have a better sense of what percent of our fleet we might want to be having as an electric fleet over time, and what kind of level of diversity we might want in our fleet. How many technologies is the right amount for diversity, and how many might be too many for now having too many different technologies that we have to maintain and buy parts for and have mechanics that are trained to work on. So there's a number of questions that will still need to come from that broader study.
I see. So you, so what I'm hearing you say is that it would be kind of a tiered time-based strategy where, you know, within the next 5 years, this is what you could do, then 10 years, 15 years, 20.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, I think that that's part of that broader picture that the board is talking about a strategic business plan to say, where do we want to go? And this analysis is telling us that our fleet emissions are the big deal, right? The other set of emissions is our supply chain emissions, and there are some actions that we could start taking for asking for different things in our contracts with a construction supplier in terms of cement and asphalt primarily, because there's some opportunities there for significant greenhouse gas reductions that are on the market today and usually don't have a price premium. So there's some opportunity there. But yes, the bulk of our focus should be on our fleet, which I think it was to begin with, but now it's we see it in black and white right here on how important that is.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. How do you estimate the land use benefits from transit, or is there a specific source that you use to get those estimates?
Yeah, this is a calculator that was actually produced by a number of researchers, and I can send that to you. It was TCRP report 176, if you want to look it up. And I have all of the sources documented in a very detailed audit trail, so I can tell you all the numbers. It is an estimate, yeah. Right? So it's not designed, and same with the supply chain. Actually, if you notice my chart here, one of the subtle differences is that our supply chain emissions here are a nice, perfectly round 6,000, right? Because, and I did that on purpose to show that the level of calculation there is not as precise as the 10,665 that come from our fleet, right? This is a different methodology. It's an estimation. It's designed to give us a sense of scale. And the same thing, I think, could be said from the tool that is provided. But one thing that's really interesting about the tool was that Eugene, Oregon was actually one of the research communities that they gathered data on specifically. Portland was also one of them. There were 10 communities in the United States that were used as the test case for building this tool. And it's really supported by a variety of research. It's been out since 2015, and it's designed to both give a sense of scale of the transit benefits for your entire system, but it can actually also be used to look at transit improvements at a single stop level, at a corridor level. There's a number of other benefits that we could use for with this tool over time.
One more question. So is this a kind of one-time event, or is this data that LTD is going to be tracking annually so that, you know, if, for example, if the board sets some goals or if some goals are in this new strategic business plan, that we can kind of benchmark and track over time, you know, changes, fluctuations in some of these numbers?
Absolutely. That's the goal, is that this will be something that we'll continue to measure, you know, and that we'd be able to see our progress over time. It's a little, there's always a time lag to some degree. I based all the data here on NTD information, National Transit Database information, and that's a process that goes through where we have to, you know, get our numbers approved and audited. And so that's why this only goes through fiscal year 2018, is even though fiscal year 2019 just closed. But because it just closed, those numbers haven't been audited, and so I didn't include them at this time. So there might be a slight lag, but the goal is to be collecting this information on an ongoing basis and be able to track towards our goals, if the board chooses to set any.
I had a quick question. On your slide where you were looking at the benefits from ridership, the greenhouse gas benefits,
yeah.
The scope 1 and 2 was included there. I was just wondering why not scope 3?
Scope three, because the estimation methodologies are less precise, and because protocols require you to really focus on those that the emission sources you have the most direct control over, and because there's a lot more certainty in the numbers and the methodology used to calculate them, that's the main reason. Those are the emissions that we pretty much own and have direct control over. Everything else we share, and the estimation methodologies are definitely less precise. And so, but it's, the other reason that we included even the electricity and the natural gas and the refrigerants in here, instead of just looking at tailpipe emissions compared to the ridership benefit, is that, you know, all of those other services, we can't have the buses out on the road without also providing the human power in the business office and in our facilities doing the behind the scenes work to get those buses out on the road. So I made it broader than just the fleet emissions, but I didn't think it was fair to look at all of those scope three emissions because they're from such a broad range of sources and they're really shared with other entities.
Thank you.
Do we have a target date for when the Washington contract bus, electric buses, we'd like to see them on the street? Are we shooting for a certain time frame?
Our goal is, the delay cost a little bit. We're hoping the holidays don't get in the way, but our goal would be that if Washington completes their procurement, that we will have information and we'd like to take something to our board in November. We will then ask our board to approve that, and we'll enter into a contract, and we're going to ask for a production schedule that we hope is somewhere around 14 months. In the perfect world, I say December 2020. That's the perfect world. If it ends up being February or March 2021, we can live with it, but we definitely feel that when the World Games come, we'd be remiss in not having electric fleet operating actively. So we're going to set some real tight requirements, but being that we're buying such a small amount of them, they're very expensive, we don't have the big buying power, but we do feel we have enough relationships that they will push on our behalf, and staff's been reaching out and trying to build those relationships so that they know our urgency, that since we have made the decision that electric vehicles do operate well, under certain circumstances, and if they can meet those circumstances, we'd like them to get them here within, we'd love them here in 12 months, but 14 months we could live with. So. And that's live in operation, we say, in 14 months, not. Hopefully they are delivered before that.
And that's, pushing them to get a favorable production schedule. So we'll know more soon.
Anybody
else? We'll move on to our next item. Thank you so much, Kelly. That was a great presentation.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Okay, so the next two items we have are moving ahead and the Maine McVeigh Transit Study update. They're similar, so just a little prompt to, we'll get some updates, think about the public engagement process, decision-making process, timeline, those sort of things, and if you have any thoughts that we could share, we want to share with the board or staff related to that. So Andrew is going to do moving ahead.
Yeah, right. So this can be brief, or if you have any questions, I'm really happy to take all of the time on the agenda. We last met almost 3 months ago on moving ahead, and at that meeting in June, SPC provided a recommendation to LTD's board on a range of investment packages that we should be considering for a public hearing. In July, the board and city council held a joint public hearing, work session, where they directed staff to take a range of investment packages out, which is similar but not entirely the same as the range that SPC and our other committees recommended. What you see on the screen are the recommended the packages that we're going to take to the public hearing. When we drafted the AIS, the public hearing date had not been set. It has been confirmed now for October 21st at 7:30 p.m. in Harris Hall. Before the public hearing, we're going to hold something like an open house, just informational to help our community members understand the new packages, make sure everybody is aware of exactly what we're talking about, answer any final questions so our community members can really use their 3 minutes most effectively at the public hearing. We want to make sure that everybody's set up for success. So that's what we're looking forward to. Hopefully all of you can attend. I know some of you will be there in official capacity, but the rest of you are also welcome to come and share your opinions with our decision makers. Were there any questions?
May I just add something? I know we have some newer community members. Are you all aware of Moving Ahead for the new one?
I'm sorry.
I just thought we have newer committee.
Right in there. So for those who are not aware, Moving Ahead is a joint project between the City of Eugene and Lane Transit District. We are looking at a range of multimodal investments along five major corridors within the city limits of Eugene. A couple of them touch, you know, the edge of Lane County, but no capital investment there. What we're looking at are improvements for people who are primarily those who are walking, biking, using mobility devices, or taking transit. We have three different alternatives in four of those corridors. One corridor just has two alternatives. They're do nothing now, which doesn't, to be very clear, doesn't mean do nothing. It just means there won't be additional investment outside of other plans and policies. We have the enhanced corridor, which is some investment, but not the highest level of investment. It does include transit priority investments. It includes things for people walking and biking, primarily safety and access investments for those groups. And then we have the third alternative is MX, which is our highest level of investment. It includes a greater amount of all of the transit priority and the investments for people walking and biking. So right now where we're at, we've been working for a number of years doing all the technical work, and we're about to enter kind of the final decision-making phase. The first piece of that is going to be a public hearing, as I mentioned, in October. City Council and LTD's board will hold some deliberations and then hopefully make a final decision just after the start of the new year.
So I was poking around on the Moving Ahead website looking for this document because I know I had hard copies somewhere but couldn't find them. And the most recent entry I could find on the website was a 2018 entry. So I'm wondering who's charged with keeping the Moving Ahead website current.
That is, I don't actually update it. It's my responsibility to make sure that's updated. We are almost done with all of the updated materials. You know, this table, I've sent it in emails to a number of like neighborhood groups and different stakeholders, but kind of our flashy graphics, I'm sure you've seen some of our handouts.
Yeah.
That's all almost done. We were talking about it this morning, just waiting on a few final tweaks, and then we're going to start really getting that out into the public. One of the other hangups is we're waiting to do some modeling on the system-wide ridership. So with the new packages, we haven't done the kind of, we have a transportation modeler who looks at, you know, how many people would be riding. We've got that slotted into our work program, and we won't have that data for another few weeks at least, because the system-wide ridership when we build multiple corridors is a little bit different than just going and adding each corridor together. So we want to make sure everybody has the best information. Everything but that will be available probably next week or so.
Will it be on the website available?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Okay.
And if you are a member of any group that you send out newsletters to, we're happy to talk to any groups that are interested in this, or we can provide you with tables like this or whatever information you need to kind of help us get the word out.
I have a question just on enhanced corridor, and you know, because we've talked about this before. I'm just wondering, in the spirit of getting the public set up for success at this meeting on October 21st, are you going to provide definitions for what enhanced corridor looks like? Or is that still kind of anything from there's a bike lane to not quite MX.
So I was talking with Tom about this earlier today, and I think one of the challenges with describing it is when we look at enhanced corridor and MX development, we're looking at something that's very contextual to the corridor. So just by way of extremes, if you look in our map books, I'm happy to walk anybody through this interested, but we have a fairly expensive enhanced corridor on Coburg Road that isn't that far off of some of the other MX projects. The reason for that is because it's the corridor just has more intense use. The type of investments we need to make are higher. There's nothing, I would say that's like, there's no really hard line between what could be an MX but never an enhanced corridor. So, you know, enhanced corridor projects and some of the other corridors like Highway 99, for instance, we don't need as much infrastructure. So, you know, why would we build it if we don't need it? I don't know if that answers the question.
Can I just elaborate?
Sure.
So I think we we could probably come up with a definition. I don't know if it would provide any more transparency. Our MX project have traditionally been what's called, instead of BRT, is ART, Advanced Rapid Transit, which include dedicated or partially dedicated lanes. So that's what LTD calls MX.
Okay.
Enhanced Corridor and MX are both BRTs in some way, because we're seeking federal funding. But enhanced means not at all dedicated, or if any, so minimal that it is moving in regular traffic, and the only amenities it has is it has stations, but those stations may or may not be raised. It has a distinct look to it, because it has to have a distinct look to it. It could have, in certain areas, signal, you know, prioritization, but it really does not behave like LTD's MX, which is more of an advanced rapid transit, which I now think they're calling ART, acronym ART. So I think we've never really kind of defined that, and it's because it could be so minimal that a lot of enhanced just flow with regular, but they reduce bus stops and add like these minor amenities. And those amenities, I guess we're trying not to guarantee them when we don't have to. So you can have a very minimal infrastructure project that qualifies as an enhanced BRT project, and except for the color of the bus and a few stations and a few like key amenities at key locations, it's basically like a regular bus. It could also be a 40-footer.
Right.
It would never be smaller than a 40-footer, but it could be a 60-footer, but it cannot. So the range of enhanced is so large, but what we can say, it is either no or very little dedicated lanes.
Okay.
It's more of an enhanced.
So is there a way to make that clear at the meeting? Because I think when Best has been talking to folks this summer, it's sort of like this really squishy definition of what enhanced corridor means. And I think at this public hearing, if people don't understand the difference between MX
and enhanced
everything else, they're not going to be able to make
that's
a useful decision.
We can try to put that, and I don't know if what I explained clarified it or confused it. And I think that's why we've been like, how do we put it in writing and will people really understand? But I think we could put that MX, it's an enhanced version. I'm sorry, where are we calling it now? MX. MX is very much an advanced one. Enhanced is really the lower infrastructure. And maybe we can talk about dedicated lanes, because MX controversy has really been surrounded about its dedicated lanes. So maybe that's a way we can quantify it without making any commitments in one way. But that best describes it. You're not likely to see an enhanced with a lot, if any, dedicated lanes.
If I can point you to a fairly dry document that has exactly what we're talking about. So there's a document on our website. I can forward it to anyone who's interested. It's called the Detailed Definition of Alternatives. And for each corridor, it contains, for instance, in it, for the enhanced corridors, the number of stops, because not all stops would be enhanced. So it contains, for instance, a list of stops that we would potentially enhance as the project is designed today. Mm-hmm. I'll also say that we're really focused on the transit piece here, but moving ahead is, it's a partnership between the city and LTD. The city's really the lead on this. Transit is an important part of a multimodal corridor, but from the start, this hasn't been about, you know, a building a new MX line. What it's really been about is how our community can move on some of our key corridors as Eugene continues to develop. Transit's one piece of that. That's why all of our alternatives have, you know, investments for people who are walking, people who are biking, safety investments for the roadway, even for motorists. You know, we're not, we're trying to make the corridors work for everyone as Eugene develops.
Can I get in the queue? Mm-hmm. I think Emily was next, though, or somebody.
I appreciated Mary Ann's question, because I think when we say enhanced corridor across the board, for example, that first corridor package, it makes it sound like whatever you're doing on Highway 99 is what you're going to do on Coburg Road, and I don't want that to be misleading or concerning to community members. So thank you. That's all.
So I was having a conversation, rather lengthy, with a community skeptic who I don't really want to say any more than that because it'll give it away, but there are people out there who think that there's that not defining enhanced corridor is a devious effort on the part of the district to get authorization to spend a lot of money on something really fancy. And the both of the explanations that I heard from you, I think are really reasonable to say, to acknowledge that enhanced corridor is a broad definition and it will be applied differently depending on the needs of a particular corridor. Makes perfect sense to articulate that it won't include dedicated lanes. Perfect sense. I mean, there are several touch points that I think would give the community assurance if you can put those in writing.
People will footnote them. That way, every time that comes up, they know.
Well, let me just add, I think how you're describing it and what how you summarize what you've heard is really helpful. But you were there, Mike, when we drew up here. It was the first sketch of where we were trying to place enhanced corridor in a spectrum of transit improvements. And I still think that's a valuable way to think about it. I do think we could do more to precisely, you know, put limits on it, like you just articulated, what you heard from AJ and Andrew. But one of the issues, I would say there's two issues. One is that the BRT that we've implemented in this community is at the high end of BRT. And so when we say enhanced is not BRT, that doesn't give people a really good sense of what BRT is, because BRT is, you know, BRT extends into what we might call enhanced corridor in some respects. You know, you can brand it, you can do things like that. Now, I'm not saying we'd do that for enhanced corridor, but it's a wide spectrum of transit improvements that are intended in primarily to assist with operating through the corridor. So they're not the splashy stations and buses and all that stuff nor is it necessarily a 10-minute frequency of operation. It's really intended to help us get through a busy corridor as we're going through it.
So I think skeptics are looking for assurance that this is not a way to sneak BRT into the system surreptitiously somehow. And what you're saying is perfectly reasonable. They just need to know it, because they're going to suspect the worst if we don't articulate it.
Sure. That's good.
Any other questions, comments, concerns related to moving ahead? No. I just want to thank everyone that spoke, because I think those are really important points and hopefully helpful for staff. And we've been talking about this for a long time, so we know in our minds we kind of know what enhanced corridor means, but for the public that may not have as much time to engage with it, providing some sort of definition or just on a very high level what it is, what it isn't, how enhanced corridor could be very different, one corridor compared to another, the cost could be different, I think is helpful. So thank you all for your hard work.
Thank you for your comments.
Yeah. So next is Maine McVeigh. Tom.
And talking about enhanced corridor. So you all should have received this nice little outline in your packets. I'm not going to go through each of these bullets. Thumbs up. But understand that this project has been going on for quite some time. In fact, the 2014 date here is actually 2 years after we received the grant money. And we spent a year and a half working with a stakeholder advisory committee to get the whole project started. But anyway, we've gone through process that led us to identify an MX option for Main Street as well as an enhanced corridor option. And as we went through this process, particularly the last 3 or 4 years, both city and LTD staff have recognized that there have been a lot of concerns raised from adjacent property owners. We had gone out and talked to most of the properties along Main Street. And as we thought about moving forward, in particular in conjunction with the Main Street Safety Project, which has got a longer time frame, we felt that it was would be helpful both with respect to resources and just clarity in the policy process to take MX off of the table at this point in time. And so as part of the Main Street Transit Study, we asked the governance team, which is made up of Springfield, LTD, ODOT representatives, to formally take MX off the table at their meeting back in July, on July 30th. And it was with that understanding that given the public feedback that we've received to date and given the limited resources moving forward, it makes sense to take MX off the table. That gives us an opportunity then to focus our remaining resources on fleshing out an enhanced corridor option that will be consistent with the safety project. And again, if you're not familiar with the overall schedule, the safety project's process is going to be looking at solutions this coming fall over the next few months. And a draft plan will be completed in the spring of 2020, and adoption will take place between 2020 and 2021. And that's kind of when we would be coming to closure on what exactly that enhanced corridor option might look like in the context of whatever the proposed safety project looks like. That's it. Any questions? Comments?
When would the public involvement take place on that, McVeigh?
Well, I think right now the solutions are being developed, and so it would be after they're fully fleshed out that the safety project would have a public engagement process. And while the focus would be placed on that, we've developed enhanced corridor options that have been out there for public review. We put those back out just so that things are kind of moving in tandem.
So the enhanced corridor proposals are available right now?
That option has been out on the table for probably a couple of years.
Okay. So. Are there published documents or?
Yep.
Okay. And then you're just waiting for the safety?
We're coordinating.
Okay.
Actually, keep in mind that this isn't an LTD project solely either. We're working with the city of Springfield. And so as the city of Springfield, and actually they're the lead on this project as well. And so as we move forward, they're calling the shots as to when information goes where.
So, sorry for all the questions. So spring 2020, after that draft plan is published, would probably be the next big public engagement.
I would guess. Well, so again, I'm just looking at the schedule here. The solutions are being developed now, this fall. The recommended solutions would be in the winter of 2020. And so over the next 6 months, there's going to be some level of public engagement around those solutions.
So just for clarity, Tom was very gracious in not mentioning that the city of Springfield put the brakes on the LTD portion of this project for at least a year. It could have been longer. And the governance team, which is managing the project, had been meeting only very occasionally, very rarely. Was it twice a year or less than that?
It varied. I mean, it's been going on long enough.
So I don't mention this to be critical, but it's important that folks realize that LTD is in a partnership and they're not the lead in the partnership. And the lead partner has determined the timeline to some great extent.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mike. Any other, and thanks, Tom.
Sure.
Any other questions, comments, concerns? Okay. Let me look back here. So, Mark, is Mark still here?
I will do it for him.
Yes. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yes, Mark is actually traveling on business. He has a committee meeting about zero emission buses. Excited to hear what he learned from that. So I'll provide you the MGO launch update. Does anybody here not know what MGO is? Please speak now. Speak. It's been on the news every day. Okay. We've done a lot of outreach as far as MGO. We launched it on the Friday Market Fest. We had a lot of interest from a lot of different community members. About the vehicle, it's six passengers, all-electric vehicle that's produced locally here in California and then a dealer in Portland. So we were able to get the vehicle in a short turnaround to be able to launch it with the service. The vehicle rode in non-traditional service in the evenings of the Market Fest, just kind of picking up people wherever they were, trying to just get people to get a ride. We had a vehicle on display, letting people get in and out of that vehicle, and just answering questions about kind of what LTD is doing, kind of big picture, Transit Tomorrow, all the things, but just really highlighting that MGO is just one piece of that, of all the efforts. People asked us about moving ahead, about Main Street. So we answered a lot of questions, big picture. So our key messaging is that this is just one piece of the multiple efforts that we're doing towards mobility. And MGO is a partnership with the City of Eugene, Lane County, and LCOG, who are all key players. But we also have strong support from private businesses and the chamber. On this project, the graduate is actually allowing us to store and power our vehicles in their parking lot. So we're really getting a lot of community support around these vehicles. The first couple of days of ridership were fairly low. I think Mark and I jumped on and off of them like our private taxis, trying to just stimulate conversation with people. The company Ride Zero that we contracted with really took a proactive approach. They really want this partnership to be successful. And when their drivers were not actually transporting the very few people that actually rode them, they were kind of pulling over and talking to people who were walking and just promoting them and giving out information. So they took that on themselves to really promote that for us. I think people want friendly drivers and, you know, and they want to get in a vehicle that they feel good about. So we hope at the next meeting, whether it's a written report or verbal report, we'd love to bring you ridership information because we'll have at least more of that. Right now, people are still downloading the app, getting used to it, and seeing how it works or it doesn't work. So our goal, again, for those of you that may not recall, it's a one-year pilot. We're going to be evaluating how it performs, and we're going to be seeing how the data that we are collecting helps inform our decisions. If the footprint is too big, not big enough, or their stops are too many or not enough. So those are the type of decisions we'd love to bring you back information regularly about what we're doing. Any questions on MGO?
So unlike skeptics, I've been talking to friends, and the friends were extremely concerned about the information. I know you feel like a lot got out, but people really didn't understand what was happening. I mean, I went to the Market Fest, and so I talked, I got in and out, and I was happy. But a lot of people just had no idea what it was, what was going on. But the most frustration was the app.
Yes, we are having challenges with the app.
And so trying to figure out how to communicate about that. I mean, one guy just said, I know how to get around Philadelphia, but I can't get around Eugene. That's
yes.
When he went on the app.
And this is just really common on pilots. We had the very same situation at the when we launched the Cottage Grove one. When you launch them, all the GPS coordinates are weird. Even sometimes, like, if you travel anywhere and you take your phone and your phone hasn't memorized that new city, it keeps saying you're in the wrong place. It's all cellular-based technology, so it's really wacky. So as the vehicles move more and more, and the technology actually gets smarter, it'll do it. And that's one of the things that we knew would happen. But making the vehicle so available, and as the app learns this location, it'll start adapting to that. So yes, that is a downside of just regular technology, that it's continuously communicating. Those of us that were kind of early adopters, so Uber and Lyft, like, they never knew where the heck you were. And now, my God, they literally can pinpoint you to a square on the ground. But it just, technology learns it. So it's learning the area. And that's why we don't do like a 90-day pilot. We do a one-year pilot. Because it'll take about 90 days for the app just to normalize. And then you have to kind of win back those people that were frustrated. And then you start gathering. And then you go out and do the real marketing. You really, and I was talking to some board members, you really wait to do the big marketing when it's like nice and clean. You don't want to do it when you're testing out the first few months. But what we did is we did the outreach to the city, the county, the employees that we thought would be tolerant of that. So, yeah, unfortunately, that's been our experience.
I did. I've got two questions. First one is, given the walkability of downtown, I'm wondering, in the relatively nice weather that we're starting with, is that partially the reason why we're getting some lower numbers, and that maybe when the weather gets worse?
It could. And some of the things that we're doing, the reason we saturated it the way we did also is we're learning. I mean, in the future, as we've talked about, we'd love to partner with bike share. And when people can kind of bike share, then even use this, then we start moving the footprint wider, right? Less stops. So that if you're walking within maybe 4 blocks, we all agree, maybe you should walk, it's better. If you're maybe going half a mile and maybe you're in a hurry, maybe you should bike share, or, you know, get one of the bikes and head out there. But if you're going further distance, maybe this. But what we didn't want is people to say, well, the vehicle stopped, you know, passes it up. So if you notice, it's a real saturation, and then we change up the footprint as we gather data. But you're also going to gather like really specific data because you have the footprint so tight. So a lot of it is just pilot, and it's research. We're bringing to this group maybe sometime, probably next month, the Cottage Grove. We're just getting really good data out of the Cottage Grove. So we're just having our initial meetings to be able to present as to kind of what, and I think we're bringing something, a contract to the board to extend, because we've captured some interesting data that we'd like to test out. So yeah, the Cottage Grove one took at least 6 months to get us good data. So this one will, and I think there'll be a lot of adjustments. But yeah, that's probably the reason.
And my second question is, and I wonder if someone else already asked this at some point earlier on, but if for some reason this pilot goes very badly, do we have a contingency plan for what to do with the vehicles and other materials associated with MGO?
We can always use the vehicles. We run a Medicaid program and a paratransit program that really could always use lighter weight vehicles. Some of our customers need maybe more space for their wheelchair, but a lot of our customers just use a walker or a cane or are unable to move. So this vehicle is really low to the ground in ADA. So it has a lot of practical applications. and is like a third of the cost of our regular paratransit. So yeah, we would not be, this is a great addition to our fleet no matter what.
Okay, that's yeah. good. And I don't want people to interpret that as like pessimism, like, oh, this is going to go well. Someone asked me that question. I was like, oh, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. So,
yeah, it. Yeah. We made sure that these yeah. fit in well with our footprint here. They work yeah. great in the metro area. They don't work as great like in areas where they're going long distances, like the freeways and all that, because there's low moving vehicles. But in the metro area, would they work great.
Yeah. And earlier, just so you know, I was when I was looking at the MGO service area, I was thinking for me as a person, the distances were so short that I would prefer to walk. But I thought, well, when it starts to rain, I was like, I would definitely be more interested in using MGO. So I wondered how many other people felt similarly.
And as the seasons change, yeah. the ridership patterns do change right. a lot about where they're riding to. And that's where the data starts. That's why I said yeah. it's taking us a while to get really good Cottage Grove
yeah.
data. It's just starting to look really good now. But the first few months, it's just all over the place.
Right. Thanks, AJ.
I have just one more quick question. So with the partners that are involved in helping to fund this project, what do you have a sense of what their goals are and what would be success for them to want to continue funding it?
Yes. We really know that the county and the city, both who are the larger contributors, their main goal is to address congestion. And they have, they want greener solutions, and they want parking solutions. So, I mean, they're really looking for how their parking needs, how the traffic, you know, moves around in that area, and if it's taking cars off the roads. Yeah, so they've got pretty clear goals, and based on our ridership data, we'll be able to show, based on the number of passengers, how many people didn't travel by car. I think we can speculate and extract some of the data that some of the shorter trips, people may have walked, so we won't count those. So based on the distances, we can really capture what we're looking for to be able to produce good information.
Okay, and then the city will be kind of looking at parking and congestion to see if there are any observations they can make about how MGO has impacted that as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as the data becomes kind of more normalized, it'll be interesting. There's a team that will meet about MGO and really start tracking the data, and it's the partnerships, all the key partners sit at that table. Mark Johnson represents us. And it'll be interesting to see what decisions they're making or, you know, and how they're evolving the program.
One final question. You mentioned riders might be similar to bike share riders. Has there been any like partnership or discussions about that yet? I'm kind of coming into this late. So.
Not yet, but only because we didn't have good data to be able to do that. But I think as we look at it, there's going to be some natural travel patterns, and we're going to see where people are traveling, where there was like maybe a bike station here and a bike station there. Could those potentially be more suited for a bike share program? But without saying what that looks like, we don't have the travel patterns data. As we've said, we probably could have done a study, but we would have paid the same amount of money for a study than just getting real live data. And then we can come and say, hey, here's opportunities to partner. You know, maybe we can extend MGO going further so that people going shorter trips can use an alternative, like a greener alternative, like bike share. But so that's what we're using this pilot to just collect travel aggregate, not individual, but aggregate travel patterns, which is what we get.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Anything else? That's our last major item on the agenda. We do have some written reports, so if there are questions about that, we can ask those questions. And then we also have our working agenda, which is Camille has helped us put together for future meetings. Next month, we're talking about bringing to the group a, I'm trying to look here, transit tomorrow breakout sessions. Transit tomorrow breakout sessions. I was thinking, I thought in my mind I had remembered that we were talking about maybe strategic plan, looking at that in October. But we will have our next agenda setting meeting is going to be next week. Let me find it real quick. Camille, do you remember off the top of your head? Is it Wednesday? Yeah. Okay, next Wednesday at 1 o'clock. So if anyone like to participate in that or has thoughts on the agenda, feel free to come to the meeting or share them now or with us in the future. Anything else for the good of the order? We can get out early. Yeah. No, don't apologize.
Page under the greenhouse gas inventory results, it just there's an action needed possible board recommendation, and I just wondered if there was anything that we'd like to recommend or pass along to the board.
No, thank you. Staff, were there any thoughts on specific guidance that would be helpful, or was that just an open-ended question for the committee?
Just open-ended if this group had an interest.
Well, my thought would be, since given our reduced numbers for today and we're missing a lot of key partners, maybe we save that for the next meeting.
Yeah, sounds good. I think it ties in well to just this overall idea of the strategic business plan. So goals related to greenhouse gases could go into that. So
one of us could give them a book report of what we learned that day. Speed things along.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for taking time out of your summer to come to the meeting. And I think that's it. Have a good night.
Thanks, Amy.